a lot of enthusiasm to start the show today. I just couldn't hold back.
Sometimes you just got to get it out there, you know?
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here with you for the next hour, or even before the hour, as we might have briefly heard for a second there. Apologize for that.
We will make do.
Well, we're playing radio every day, right?
Absolutely.
With me, Tom Hsu, in the control room.
Always a pleasure to be here, Tom.
Executive technical producer. If you enjoy some of the videos here at Flashback Twin Cities, some of the audio we play, go to www.tcmedianow.com. And we have a great show today. We're going to have Steve Carroll of the Minnesota DNR, also a former sportscaster at CARE 11, Channel 11, and a couple events in history I want to talk about before we get in with Steve. The North Star Train. Do you know what the North Star Train is, Tom?
You know, I don't.
Have you heard of the North Star Line?
Yes, I have.
What do you think the North Star Line is?
I would imagine it's a northern train line. Would I be correct, Tom?
You are correct.
Partially correct. I got one.
There is no wrong answer because I think there's three North Star lines in and around Minnesota. And we're looking at right now, I went downtown St. Paul this week and saw the great, by the Union Depot, the great train tracks of our Metro Transit Central Corridor train line. It's going to run from Minneapolis to St. Paul. And I recall when they were doing the construction, they had to take out the pavement on University Avenue, and they found train tracks. It's amazing in progress that you cover up train tracks, we uncover find train tracks, and then put new train tracks.
Had they forgotten that those train tracks were there in the first place?
No,
was it a surprise when they found them?
No, in fact, I don't think they were functional after the years of concrete on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I do I do just find it interesting, and many others probably that lived through the first time that the train tracks were removed, that were doing it all over again. Now, I'm not questioning its functionality. I just find it interesting that we're putting up the train tracks. In fact, we have a commuter train that goes from Minneapolis to the northern suburbs called the North Star Train. It is the second North Star train we've actually had in town. The first one was operated by Amtrak and was introduced in the 70s as a Chicago to Duluth train line. And as much as we love our rail, we've never been able to find a functional, sustainable way to support them. Let's play some audio from September 6, 1982. This was on the first North Star train that was going from St. Paul to Duluth.
Eyewitness News, the Northwest's most complete, comprehensive, and up-to-the-minute coverage. With meteorologist Dave Dahl, sportscaster Bob Bruce, newscaster Stan Turner, and Cindy Brucato.
Good evening, everyone. Amtrak's passenger train, the North Star it's called, made its last run from Duluth to the Twin Cities tonight. For several years, money problems threatened to derail the North Star, but there were always last-minute reprieves. This time, it looks as though the North Star has finally reached the end of its line. Dennis Kraft was at the Amtrak depot when the North Star made its final stop in the Twin Cities tonight.
The steady, mournful clang of the train's bell was the only thing to mark the end of the line for Amtrak's North Star run from Duluth. That and the half-hearted smiles from passengers who made the last trip. It was an event tinged with sadness.
How did you feel today coming back in the train, knowing it was going to be the last time?
Pretty sad about it. It was a really nice trip. It's a real nice way to go up to Duluth.
We went up to Duluth special to come back on this last Amtrak train.
And I just had Pink's last trip. It was beautiful.
The conductor and the brakeman were just super people. I just hate to see them go.
Those who rode the North Star home tonight said it was sad to see the passing of an era. The last trip was especially hard for those who worked on the train.
It's a sad thing, really. I hate to see it happen. I'm losing my job.
I guess we're all kind of bitter about it because it's a profitable train, you know. Yesterday we had about 600 people. And when you carry people like that all the time, they're making money.
Amtrak's North Star line has been down to the wire before, and always, at the last minute, more money has been found to keep the train running. But this time, there will be no last-minute reprieve from the governor. Amtrak has no more money.
Wait, there's more. A last-minute $27,000 funding donation was made by Duluth businessman Gino Pellucci. The train continued on as a weekend and peak period train for three more years. Unfortunately, by the end of service in 1985, the North Star was no longer planned to serve Superior, Wisconsin, as only making intermediate stops in Cambridge and Sandstone. State funding for the train ran out in March 1985, and the train made its final run on April 7th, 1985.
But then, like Cher, it made a comeback tour.
It made a comeback tour in 2010 as a commuter train from the downtown Minneapolis to the northern suburbs. Different rail line, but same name.
I was going to ask if they said they always found money at the last second. Now, was this always from a private grant, or was this from a government thing? Just somebody who loved trains and didn't want them to go away?
There's a lot of rail enthusiasts out there.
Oh, and, yeah. If you're a train person.
In fact, when I was kind of prepping the show today, I was looking up some items on the internet, and a lot of train enthusiasts have wrote about this line. But the state was pretty much done funding it. And Gino Pellucci, he gave a donation to the train to keep it going, and it went for about three more years. There's about three stories. You can look it on tcmedianow.com or the internet of the last run of the North Star line. Perhaps, hopefully, the next generation, we don't close any more trains because we end up having to rebuild them anyway.
Well, all we have to do is just get rid of the concrete and we'll have the tracks ready for us.
You know, I'm guessing if we'll go back to horse and buggies, right?
Well, that might be a stretch. But
it takes less fuel to run them.
Well, you know what? If gas prices keep going up, I do remember when the gas prices started skyrocketing, I did see some news stories about people who were riding horses to work.
I think we can park our horses here at the studio and do the show every Saturday, right?
Let's do that.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back with Steve Carroll. He's with the Minnesota DNR and a former sportscaster with KARE and WTCN and WUSA in about three different names. But we'll come back with Steve Carroll on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here on KLBB, joined by my guest today, Steve Carroll of the Minnesota DNR. And your official title is?
I'm an information officer for the Department of Natural Resources.
And a former sportscaster at
KARE.
Pick your call letters, WTCN, KARE.
Well, yeah, we were WTCN for a while, then we were WUSA for a little while, and we were KARE, yeah.
And you've been, how long has it been since you were on sports on Channel 11?
I left in 1994.
Excellent.
So almost 20 years.
Excellent. Do you miss it?
Some aspects, yeah. I mean, it's changed the way they do it now. But, you always got the adrenaline rush of covering the big sports and being on the location and being at the sporting event. So, yeah, some parts I miss. But it was a good run. Great time to be in the business.
How many preseason games did you have to cover? Vikings training camps did you have to go out in squelching hot weather to get a chance to, you know, get 5 minutes with Tommy Kramer?
Yeah, the exhibition games are different than they are today. I mean, the first-line players play a little bit more than they do this year or nowadays. Covering training camp, we used to cover training camp all the time in Mankato, and I went to school in Mankato, so mm-hmm. It was kind of fun to go back as a journalist and not as a student. And those were some long, hot days, but, it was cool to just cover the Vikings and cover all the sports teams here in town.
And you were able to cover at least one championship in your sports tenure at the 1987 Twins. They did win the World Series, so as you can say, you had one pretty fun year.
Well, we had the Twins. We had the, you know, I was there for the 87 and 91 World Series, and that was great. And I think one of the cool things about the 87 was they had that welcome home ceremony mm-hmm. from when they came back from Detroit, and it turned out that I didn't travel to Detroit. But I was back in Minneapolis, so we decided to do some live coverage from the Metrodome mm-hmm. for the event, and the event just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the next thing you know it, we're going live, winging it, because there was so much coverage going on, and the Twins ended up hooking into our feed. And so now our feed's up on the scoreboard, and so now I'm talking to all the people in the stadium about what's happening, and the whole thing was winging it. I don't think there was a script for any of it.
Well, I think the best thing about that era was you look at these massive crowds in downtown Minneapolis, and there's no problem. There's no riots. There's no violence. There's no police involved. I mean, it was a very fun time, and there's a lot of people in a kind of small spot downtown. No problems.
No, I mean, even in the celebrations, when they won the World Series, it was, I don't know, peaceful, but it was certainly civilized mm-hmm. Celebrations and just having a good time, and there was no, Cars weren't being lit on fire or tipped over or any of that stuff.
Well, where's the fun in that?
I don't know.
That's only during a Frozen Four victory, right? 10 years later.
Well, that was a different story, I'm guessing. But, yeah, I mean, there was just kind of – they were just excited that the pro team in town won a championship, and it was their time to celebrate. And, yeah, it was really kind of fun.
Well, every 100 years we're due, right? So tell me, Mr. Carroll, tell me about growing up. Are you from Minneapolis area?
Yeah, I grew up in the Edina area. I went to school at Edina East High School and then down to the college at Minnesota State Mankato. And
was your goal to be in sports broadcasting?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, of course, I thought I was a professional-level athlete, as we all did. But that, of course, wasn't going to happen. And then at that time in the late 70s or so, that was when the former athletes were moving into the broadcast booth as color commentators or sportscasters or whatever. And I always thought, well, I could do that too. I mean,
what was your major?
Mass communications.
Okay.
So I had some training.
All right. That's what I'm at too. Yeah. Very good.
And so I thought I could do it. I knew enough about sports to hopefully be able to communicate on TV and did some radio work in Mankato when I was in school and did some TV work. And so, by the time I graduated, I had some background, pretty good background, I suppose, to make the jump from. I went from Mankato to Minneapolis,
which is pretty good because a lot of people had that very long road of small markets in Iowa, and you take your pick, North Dakota, South Dakota, before you go to the 14th biggest market in the country, and you went to Channel 11, which at the time might have been considered a small market station, even though it's in a big market.
Right, and that's, you know, the folks that I worked with in Mankato kept telling me, well, people don't go from Mankato to Minneapolis. It just doesn't happen. And I was fortunate that it did work out for me, that I knew Jeff Passolt actually from through his brother, because we played hockey against each other in college, and knew Jeff, and that kind of helped me get in the door there at Care 11. And I went from Mankato to Minneapolis, and you know, some other people have done too since, but it's, I didn't have to go and do some of the small market stuff to get to the major market, which was probably okay.
Do you remember the first day on the air at Channel 11?
No, I don't remember the first day, no. Uh-uh.
Okay. Do you remember what the first story you covered was?
No, I don't.
Because no. usually I get people say that, you know, the first, after their internship or after college, they go and they're usually doing some background work, and then they say, oh, by the way, so and so called in sick today. You're the guy on the air tonight. In fact, that's Jeff Passolt's story that he uses when he talks about his first day at Channel 9.
I don't remember the first story. I do remember, you know, I started as a producer, and a part-time producer, and I thought it was kind of cool when they would use my questions. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'd be interviewing Tommy Kramer or Bud Grant or whoever else, and then they would use my question to set up his response. And I thought, oh, geez, I'm on. That was me on the TV, and so that was kind of cool. But I don't remember exactly what was the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you started doing regular contributions to the morning news in about the mid-'80s.
Yeah, they you know, back then they decided that let's have some morning news programming, and they started the Care 11 Sunrise segment and air show. And back then they had a live sports presence. And today they tape it from the night before, but I was the morning sports guy, and I thought it was great to be on morning sports and recap what happened the night before or preview what's coming up ahead, and that was a lot of fun, actually.
Well, it's fortunate because I think that I talked to John Bachman a few months ago before he retired, actually, and he said he's glad he got out of morning news because now about 3 or 4 hours long now, you get up at 4 o'clock and do 4 hours of morning news. You guys had a half hour, an hour. You were lucky.
Right, and I think the whole notion of morning news has changed. Now it's big business in the morning, and people are watching the news differently in the morning than they did before. And I think in some ways when we were doing it, it was kind of like the junior varsity. Mm-hmm. And you guys are on the morning show, and mm-hmm. someday maybe you'll get to the 10 o'clock news. But I think, you know, today, if you're on the morning news, that's a nice slot to be on. They get a lot of viewers, and they are on a long time, but they get a lot of viewers.
Tom, let's play that second window I have up. Actually, let's listen to a little flashback here from 1987.
Sunny and mild again in the Northeast. So it's going to be scattered showers around
the Gulf
Coast.
Tom, let's skip that a little
bit
to the news intro. I'm sorry. I didn't cue that up right. I have a little audio here from the Sunrise Show in 1987, which Tom will play for you.
75 degrees this morning. This road trip is really a stern test for the twins, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. The West Coast trip, they could either be make or break. This weekend really could make or break, and they got a two-game lead going into the series. If they don't play well, they could be in trouble. Well put, huh? Two is the magic number tonight as the Twins open their big series at Oakland. Twins looking to snap their two-game losing streak, in the process hoping to increase their two-game lead over the second-place A's. Now, here is the pitching matchup for tonight's tilt. Veteran Bert Blyleven gets a starting nod. He is 9-8 so far. Oakland plans on throwing Dennis Lamp. Game time, it's a late one, starting at 9:35. Former Cy Young Award winner Vida Blue is talking about making a comeback. The 38-year-old Blue, who retired in February, says he wants to pitch again for one of three teams, including the Minnesota Twins. The hometown team is looking for a starting pitcher since they shipped Mike Smithson to the minors. Twins GM Andy McPhail is working hard to make a deal. He told News 11 Sports he's been talking to four or five teams about acquiring an experienced pitcher, perhaps a Steve Carlton or Floyd Bannister. McPhail hopes to make some sort of a deal before today's 4 p.m. trading deadline.
But 100 degrees, and the Twins weren't doing so great that summer, even though they won the World Series eventually.
Yeah, even if you think about it, I think they only had like 85 wins or something. Yeah, it was not a stellar regular season, but they won enough games to win the division, and then, of course, they got hot in the playoffs and the World Series. Yeah.
Now, I think the jackets are my favorite part of those newscasts. I think the light-colored jackets, the light blues, and the...
Yeah, you know, it was what it was. You know, I mean... You just look at that, the costume.
That's right.
Of course, you can't see it on the radio, but yeah, I mean,
it's a thing of beauty. Do you believe me?
Yeah, I mean, it was what it was. I mean, that's 20 some years ago, so it was probably happening in style back then. I don't know.
I'm not ripping. I think it's great. In fact, we've had Barry Zavan, a couple of the guys on. We said, "Do you still have the jackets? We want to know where the jackets are." But fortunately, they're probably in a Goodwill or a thrift shop somewhere.
Didn't you say everybody has a story about how it disappeared into some?
Everyone has a story.
Into the ether?
Yeah, the jackets went. It's unfortunate. So many plaids and blues and reds that are gone now. Our guest today is Steve Carroll. He is with the DNR. Information officer, you left Care 11 in 1994. Was it time for a change? Were you looking for something different? What brought about the change?
Well, I think it actually had to do with... there was some turmoil going on in the sports department you probably have talked about throughout your programs, but they had let Tom Reither go a year or two before I was let go, and I think they wanted to make a change, and they I was let go, and Jeff was let go, and then they brought in a gentleman by the name of Russell Shimoka.
Yes, they did.
Has he been a guest in your program?
No, I don't think we're going to have him on, actually, but I did find some – I looked – and not to divert you, but I looked for years of video of that experience because it was so surreal. If you don't know who we're talking about, they did a national search for the sports guy, Channel 11, and I think they made the wrong choice and brought him in here. And he if you can't pronounce the names of the towns, like Sheboygan, or if you can't pronounce the names of the Minnesota Twins, you know, the viewers are not going to connect with you too well. And didn't last too long.
No, he didn't. But I think, without getting into too much detail, I think the whole thing was kind of orchestrated. I mean, I think they were trying to show that they were clearly going in a different direction by bringing in Mr. Shimoka, and the viewers did not respond to his delivery and his personality and his presentation style. And he lasted about 6 months, and then they replaced him, or they promoted Randy Shaver, and Randy Shaver's continued on since then. But, you know, as far as the whole deal, I mean, I always looked at the broadcasting career is kind of like an athlete's career. You do it, you work hard, you do as best you can, as long as you can, and at some point it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't always end the way you want it to, but heck, I was there for 12 years, and I got to cover all the major sports and be in the major market and be in my hometown market, so it was cool. It was a great time. It didn't end the way I wanted it to, but it was fine. I moved on and made some...
Did you have some offers from other towns?
I would say not offers. It got to be that I'd been there for 12 years, and did I have the experience, did I have the background where I could have gone to a Pittsburgh or a Chicago or Milwaukee or whatever. Yeah, probably. I'm guessing I could have.
Didn't want to leave home, though.
But I didn't want to leave home, and I thought, to be honest, it would have been kind of anticlimactic, because here I was, an Edina kid, covering the hometown team on TV in Minneapolis, you know, covering all the major sports, and to go to a different market just to cover sports, I just thought that...
It'd be tough to pretend to be a Milwaukee Brewers fan after being in Minnesota for
absolutely.
Your whole life,
and,
right?
It was like, could I read the news in Chicago or Denver or wherever? Yeah, I could be a sports reporter, but I don't know that my heart would have been into it, and because of that, I chose to move down a different path.
Yeah, the story does not become quite as genuine if you actually take that and all of a sudden you're in a different market and you're trying to pretend. I think that one thing the Minnesota viewers are very in tune to is phoniness, and when people come here from different cities, and some last 20, 30 years here, and they come connected part of the community, but to come in and all of a sudden, oh yeah, I'm a Twins fan now, and I know about the Twins. I think the Channel 5's had a few different sportscasters over the years that it's never quite connected with the audience because they know it came from a national search and they don't have any connection to the town whatsoever.
Right. And like I said, I it was pretty much the dream job to be working in Minneapolis for a hometown guy. And we got to cover all the major sports came through during that time, you know, the Stanley Cups and the World mm-hmm. Series and the U.S. Opens and the Final Fours. And you had the Gophers, the Twins, and all the major sports. So it was like... Could I do sports someplace else in a different market? Yeah, I know I could, but it was just like I don't know that my heart would have been into it.
And as a young guy, being a sports fan and athlete, when you're interviewing Bud Grant and Harmon Killebrew, this had been like dream come true to have access to these guys that were legends probably when you were growing up, to be able to see them up close, and you're actually not only seeing them shaking their hand, you're talking to them on TV.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, to be honest, I lived by Harmon Killebrew in Edina. And when we were kids, if you can believe this, we could ride down to his house and knock on his door and say, is Harmon here? And then if he is, can we get his autograph? And, and sure enough, he would.
And if you could do that now, you'd ask if you could have some of his Killebrew.
Well,
exactly right.
Well, the pay scale is a little bit different for Twins for baseball players back in the 60s and 70s than it is today.
Yeah, know? And the accessibility to the media is so much different than it was back then. But he was a great guy and very easy to work with. And it was kind of like, wow, I'm talking to Harmon Killebrew. So that was kind of cool. I thought Bud Grant was awesome to talk to, but to be honest, he was probably the hardest guy for me to interview because he kind of got it.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't going to let you kind of steer him down a path he wasn't interested in going in. And back then you did one-on-one interviews. Today they all do a group interview situation. But back then you did a one-on-one interview with Bud, and if he didn't like the direction you're going with the questions, he would tell you.
our guest today, Steve Carroll, DNR information officer and former sportscaster, Channel 11. Yeah, you don't see a lot of Bud Grant press conference videos around. Now, Jerry Burns, a lot of press conference video, which is legendary on the internet, but not a lot of Bud Grant press conference
right.
video.
And I think that's all changed. I mean, you see now it's huge business, and it's all kind of scripted. You know, on Wednesdays you talk to Leslie Frazier at whatever time and the players at whatever time, and it's usually in the group setting for most of the star players. Back then you would call up and say, I'd like to talk to Bud Grant. Okay, be by here about 2 o'clock. And maybe it happened at 2 o'clock or maybe it happened at 4 o'clock, and mm-hmm. sometimes you would get him, but you'd get him by yourself and you weren't with the other guys, and it was different. But he was a great interview, but you really had to be on your game. Otherwise, he would stare you down with those eyes.
Yeah, I don't think that may be a little intimidating interview, I think, with Bud Grant. I know that even people that very seasoned, experienced people, Tom and Sam Turner, we've been here, they've said the same thing that, Bud, you're in with Bud, and you're there week after week in the Bud Grant show, and you don't really get buddy up with Bud. He kind of gives you what he's willing to give you, and go with that.
Yeah, and like I said, today you can kind of steer the coaches and players down a path that you kind of want to go at, and Bud wasn't like that. He wasn't interested in being.
He did his first state fair this year.
Yeah,
I saw that first state fair.
You know, I remember we were talking, and I was doing one of those one-on-one interviews with Bud, and we started talking. It was probably a quarterback situation if someone was hurt or who was playing, and he got going into entertainment value and that thing, and I said something about, so you're saying that with this backup quarterback, there's not going to be good entertainment, and that was kind of the end of the interview.
This is the end of the interview,
Steve. And he took the microphone off and walked away. But
he didn't show a lot of emotionally anger or happiness either way. He just kind of gave it, here's what it is, and walked away. He wouldn't do a tirade like some of the coaches would today.
No. I mean, he was a gentleman or whatever, but you kind of knew where you stood.
Right.
And if you were going down a path that he wasn't interested in going, it was, like I said, that was the end of the interview.
So come 1994, did you come home and like, okay, now what? Now what am I going to do next with my life?
Well, it happened like you kind of see on TV sometimes, where it was one of those things where I showed up to work one day and was told that, Steve, this is your last day, so if you could clean out your desk and, you know, take your stuff with you.
You didn't have security follow you out the door, did you?
I don't recall security following me out the door, but it was kind of, it was weird because I showed up for work thinking it was just going to be another day, and you get called in and being told it was your last day, it was obviously a surprise. And so it took me a while to come to understand what happened, mm-hmm. and regroup and refocus and move down a different path. But like I said, it was great while it lasted, and I likened it to an athlete's career. And
did they tell you why it was over, or did they just say, you're done?
I think it was sort of the, you're
we
doing a good job.
We thank you for your contributions and wish you best.
Yeah, so it's not really something not you could enough. Have improved on. It was just, well, you're done.
Well, like I said, I think that without getting into too much of it, sure. I think it was tied into the litigation stuff that they had going on with sure. with Tom Ryder, mm-hmm. and that
a lot of political challenges probably going on at the time.
Well, I think so, because I don't think that Jeff or myself had done anything to
create challenges
to create a situation where we maybe need to make a change with mm-hmm. what those guys are doing, mm-hmm. and like I said, I think it had to do a little bit more with the litigation that they were dealing with, or the court case they were dealing with, and actual job performance.
Okay.
They wouldn't tell me that. No, they won't, and that it is what it is, and I understand that's the business, and like I said, it happens
to Chris Cluey, happens to the best of us.
Well, you kind of know when you're going into it. Like I said, it's going to end for you sometime, whether you like it or not, or you can't always choose the way it's going to end for you. But
so the journey from sports broadcasting to the DNR, how did that journey take place?
Well, following the TV career, I got into the public relations business with a company called PR Newswire, mm-hmm. and they're a news release distribution service, and I used my sports background there to help that company develop a sports distribution service that they're still doing just fine with today. From there, I went to a publication called Let's Play Hockey, where I served as the editor there for 3-4 years, and now it was time to look for other opportunities, and I interviewed for the DNR. And I think what intrigued the DNR staff was that I had the broadcast experience that some of those folks didn't have. And so I was able to bring the insight into how the TV business works into our communications team at the DNR.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think the DNR might have had some challenges with their PR department by the time you joined the group. Because I know that the DNR, in fact, a lot of agencies in Minnesota had some, the lottery, a couple other ones, just had some PR challenges to the public. And
yeah.
It was probably good to have someone that knew how to address the public into the team.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you pick up the paper today, it's almost every day there's something in there about something going on at the DNR, good or bad, and same with the TV news. And so I think that I've helped our staff and the agency learn how to deal with the TV media, learn how to, we pitch stories to them and explain to them how a newsroom works and what might pique their curiosity, why they might come over and cover a story, and how we can help them best present it visually. And like I said, I think the media knows that, the Twin City media knows that we can help them get their stories done. So that's why we're on TV all the time.
And you're working on some of these controversial topics too. We were talking before the show started. I know the wolf hunting has been a controversial topic in Minnesota. It's legal now. There's so many licenses that are offered right now. Do you work on those types of press releases, or how to deal with the media when they inquire about these types of conversations?